Live from the WTAD studios in the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, it's time to pull up a chair and assemble today's WTAD News Roundtable.
Thank you for choosing to tune in to the Tuesday edition of the News Roundtable. Good morning, my name's Quade. I am joined by Scott Hardy from the WTAD Newsroom and Mr. Steve Bull, pressing the buttons like a maestro.
And trying to read your writing.
I really do not understand.
I know, it's not writing, it's printing, but your printing's awful.
It's not like my script. Yeah, here's the thing, I think you're My handwriting is nowhere near as nice as Mary's is, okay? I will give that to Mary. Her penmanship is fantastic. However, our previous boss's penmanship was abysmal, and I think you've trained yourself to read that scribble, therefore mine looks indecipherable.
Jim Dewey tops the list, though.
Oh, I see. I don't even... I couldn't even tell if Jim actually wrote things. How bad it is. Today, gentlemen, is the 18th anniversary of Rush Limbaugh debuting on WTAD. That would have happened back in 2000. And I don't remember the day specifically, but I remember the occurrence. Even though I wasn't working in this market yet, I heard about it.
Really?
Yes.
People talk, don't they?
It was news enough where I was working in Western Missouri, the fact that Rush Limbaugh was on WTAD got to me.
He moved a little bit to the left on the dial.
Yes,
I can hear that voice in my head right now.
Yeah, see, Scott knows exactly how and where I heard it.
Oh God.
Yeah, it sounded a whole lot like that. So, congratulations. 18 years, Rush Limbaugh on the WTAD airwaves as of today. We'll be pleased to be joined on the back half of today's show by WirePoint's Ted Dabrowski. Ted and John Klinger have put together a piece on six things that Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker has to be honed in on when negotiating the AFSCME contract that Governor Rauner could not complete over his tenure as in charge of the state. So we'll talk with Ted about just exactly the state's position, AFSCME's position, where J.B. Pritzker comes in on these situations, and what of us, the tax-paying voter. So we'll get into that with Ted Dabrowski on the back half of today's show. First things first, joining us from the WTAD Newsroom, we say good morning once again to Scott Hardy.
Good morning, Quade. Good morning, everybody. A tri-state veterans group has more land in Quincy to build their homes on, for tiny homes, rather, and Quincy police have new procedures for declaring dogs vicious. The council last night approved a resolution that would sell land at 1025 North 6th Street to the Tri-State Veterans Community Village for $10. The group's Richard Elsenpeter calls the proposal a win for everyone.
We look at it as a win-win-win for everybody because we're able to get the properties at basically nothing to build these tiny homes. We can give it to a veteran, which is a win. But then also it improves the neighborhoods. It gets the dilapidated houses out of the way. It moves it from a city-owned property back into the tax base, privately owned properties.
Council also approved four ordinances requested by Quincy Police. One brings city code in line with state law about minors vaping and using e-cigarettes. Another would require massage therapists to get a city license. And two ordinances deal with animals at large and vicious dogs. The vicious dog ordinance lays out a policy for police to declare a dog vicious based on its actions, especially if it bites someone. Police Chief Rob Copley says the new law, similar to the rabies ordinance, would also have police seize a dog for up to 10 days to determine if, in fact, it is vicious.
10 days, the reason of putting it in on all bites, regardless of the rabies vaccination, is to have the dog in hand while we make a decision on what we're going to declare it, so that if it is declared vicious, we have it, and then it can be altered or microchipped before it's released.
If a dog is declared vicious, not only would it have to be microchipped and altered, owners would also have to take out liability insurance. Repeat offenses could lead to the dog being destroyed. The ordinance should soon be posted on the QPD's website. A Quincy man faces 5 federal counts of child pornography after his arrest over the weekend. Quincy police say they picked up 73-year-old James Payne on Saturday at his home in the 600 block of College. Payne, who is a registered sex offender, was arrested on a federal warrant on 5 counts of possession of child porn. Statement from the QPD says Payne was picked up after an initial search of his home on August 31st. Police say that during the search, 5 microSD cards were recovered. After obtaining a search warrant, the QPD says that multiple images of child porn were on each of the cards. Payne was then indicted by a federal grand jury earlier this month. He made his first appearance Monday afternoon in U.S. District Court in Springfield, where the indictment was unsealed. Payne's being held by U.S. Marshals and will be back in district court on December the 21st. Investigators are looking into the cause of a Monday night fire that damaged a Keokuk home. No other details are available as yet on that fire on Bank Street or whether anyone was home at the time of the blaze. 3 people were hurt Monday morning in a 2-vehicle accident in Rawls County caused by icy roads. The Missouri State Highway Patrol identifies the 3 as 58-year-old Curtis Stombaugh Perry, 62-year-old Robin Terrell, and 48-year-old Sonia Terrell, both of Farber. Report says the accident happened just after 8 a.m. on Missouri 19, 3 miles south of Perry. Troopers say Stombaugh lost control of his vehicle on the icy highway, crossed the center line, and hit the Terrell's vehicle. Stombaugh said he'd seek his own treatment for minor injuries, while both Terrells were taken to Hannibal Regional Hospital, Robin Terrell for minor injuries and his wife Sonia for moderate injuries. Meridosia woman was hurt Saturday afternoon in a 2-vehicle accident in Quincy. Quincy police on Monday identified her as 71-year-old Barbara Foreman and says the accident happened around 1:15 p.m. at 2nd and Main. Police say Foreman was heading north on 2nd when she went through a stop sign, hit a second vehicle driven by 57-year-old Dennis Bramlett of Hannibal. Foreman was taken to Blessing Hospital with minor injuries. She was also cited for disregarding a stop sign. And a Quincy woman was hurt early Saturday morning in a 1-vehicle accident in Quincy. She's been identified as 20-year-old Michaela Reeves by Quincy police, who released details Monday on the accident. Happened just after midnight on South 12th near Jackson. Police say a vehicle driven by 22-year-old Gage Solina of Quincy crashed into the side of a vehicle parked on 12th Street. Reeves was taken to Blessing Hospital for treatment of minor injuries. Solina was cited for improper lane usage and driving uninsured. And Adams County residents who want to learn more about their health care options can do so this afternoon in Quincy. The Illinois Department of Insurance and Get Covered Illinois will be in Quincy this afternoon from noon to 2 at the Quincy Public Library. Representatives from the department will be available to provide information and answer questions on the Health Insurance Marketplace open enrollment period. Visits part of the Insurance Department's Get Covered Illinois 102-county tour. Residents can get info on signing up for health insurance and access to their benefits, such as mental health and substance abuse use disorder treatment. That is a look at the latest in local news. Of course, we'll have more for you coming up for you this afternoon, including a preview of another court appearance by the former Adams County coroner who is accused of misconduct in office. That's scheduled to take place at 2 o'clock this afternoon. We'll give you a preview of that and cover that for you as well right here on WTAD.com and, of course, on our social media at Twitter and at Facebook.
So what are they? What's the hearing?
Basically, to most likely set a date for a preliminary hearing.
Okay.
And which is Keller's lawyer has already said that he's going to waive that hearing and plead not guilty. But it is, you know, it's a formality, something they have to do.
So. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, sir. It's 10:15. We'll take a timeout. And when we come back, Ted Dabrowski from Wire Points talking about the state and the AFSCME contract next on the News Roundtable.
WTAD.
Welcome back to the News Roundtable, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We're very pleased to have joining us on the show today A frequent contributor, although it seems like it's been a while. Welcome back to the show, WirePoint's Ted Dabrowski.
Thanks for having me, Quade.
You have a piece up at WirePoints.com that we would encourage our listeners to check out called Six Facts Pritzker Can't Ignore When Negotiating the AFSCME Contract. Just to catch everybody up, this AFSCME contract has been hanging in purgatory, limbo, whatever you want to call it, for the last several years. And now that Governor Rauner is on his way out and J.B. Pritzker is governor-elect coming in, the people at AFSCME probably have big toothy grins, don't they?
Oh, they certainly do. It's phenomenal, the strategy that AFSCME took over the last 3 years vis-a-vis Rauner. The contract expired in 2015, and they had a plan way back then just to outlast Rauner. They decided they would not agree to a contract, just keep fighting, keep extending it until the day when a more friendly face would come into the position of governor, and that's what they've got. They've got Pritzker, and they're hoping that they get a nice, big, fat deal from it.
The public sector union employees for the last 3 years have said that Governor Rauner was trying to union bust with these negotiations, but wasn't he just simply trying to not budget bust?
Yeah, I think you can critique Rauner for many, many things, and you know he in the end will not be deemed a successful governor. But if you want to look at one thing where he did hold his ground, and that was defending taxpayers in this contract. So the difference between what Rauner was offering AFSCME and what AFSCME wanted was $3 billion in additional costs to taxpayers. So he held his ground, and that's one thing I think he deserves a lot of credit for. In the end, you know, the AFSCME union wants much, much more, and we outlined that in our piece. You know, they want bigger raises, more health care, more overtime dollars. And when you look at what they're already getting, you say it is absolutely crazy. It's the wrong way to go, and it's a very emblematic of what's wrong in Illinois and why we're headed towards insolvency.
Now, when we're talking about negotiations with the public sector, AFSCME is just one of them, one of the five that the state is responsible for here. And in negotiating with Governor Rauner, obviously things go back and forth, but you kind of drop the idea that perhaps they're going to come back and ask for even more from the state through Governor Pritzker. Would they be that ballsy?
Oh, heck yeah. You know, when you look, let's go over the facts. You know, over the last decade before the contract expired, AFSCME salaries were up 40-something percent during the decade. The average Illinois worker, only 11%. So you're asking Illinois workers who are, you know, just the ordinary Illinoisans who are struggling to make it in Illinois, and we know they're struggling, they have to pay these guaranteed raises for AFSCME workers. AFSCME workers are the second highest paid in the nation, or I should say state workers, Illinois state workers are the second highest paid in the nation. They get these Cadillac health care benefits and pay very little for them. They get free retiree health insurance. That's unheard of in the private sector. And then they get great pensions on top of Social Security. It is something that Illinois can't afford to pay for anymore, and that's where we're in trouble, because it's gotten so heavy, so fat, that Illinois can't bear that burden anymore.
All right, so let's break this down little by little. You point out that state workers here in Illinois are the second highest paid in the nation. Just to counterbalance, are Illinois citizens, the taxpaying voters, do we make the second highest amount household income in the nation?
No, we don't. We're one of the highest, of course, because we have Chicago, we have the financial sector. But I think the delivery of state services shouldn't be compared to what the wealth of a state should be, right? It should just be comparable to what other states pay. And in Illinois, of course, we pay much more in state worker salaries. We pay 28% more than what Wisconsin state workers get, and we pay 40% more than state workers in Indiana get. So you can see how much more we're paying our state workers.
And we pay, what I love about the Wire Points articles is you back everything up with graphs, statistics, and lots of details. The AFSCME worker salaries up 43% between 2005 and 2015. You already mentioned it. Illinois worker earnings up 11%. That's, what, about half of what inflation is, meaning that AFSCME worker salaries are up double what inflation is.
Yes, and Illinois workers are earning less than inflation. So you're seeing the average taxpayer taking a big hit when it comes to income growth, and yet they're forced to subsidize bigger and bigger guaranteed salary increases which come in those contracts.
You bring up Cadillac Healthcare insurance. I think everybody listening has had their health insurance costs go up a lot over the last several years. We use terms Cadillac. Just give us a brief summation. What does Cadillac mean, and what are AFSCME employees paying for that Cadillac privilege?
Well, basically what it means is that they're getting benefits that are far and above better than what anybody could get, for example, on the Obamacare exchanges. And yet what they pay is far less. And so what it means in Illinois is that the taxpayer is subsidizing about $15,000 a year of every state worker's health insurance costs. And the AFSCME members themselves pay about $4,500 a year. So the state taxpayers, not only are they paying, like you said, the huge cost of the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare, but then they're also forced to pay $15,000 of each state worker's health costs. It's just, again, another burden that's just unfair.
Our guest this morning, Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints.com. One of the things that you point out that I had no idea about is that AFSCME employees, a lot of state employees, also pay into and get Social Security. I thought it was one or the other, but you're saying in the case of AFSCME, it's both?
Yeah, that's the big thing. You know, when you hear the unions complain about any talk about pension reform, you'll hear them, and it's primarily the teachers, because teachers in Illinois do not get Social Security. Mm-hmm. But all the unions, you know, love that argument because they get to hide behind it. But the fact of the matter is that the pension for a career worker in Illinois, a state worker, a career worker who works 30 years plus, will get about a $1.8 million pension if they retire right now over the course of their retirement. And they'll get Social Security benefits on top of that. 96% of state workers get Social Security.
Wow.
It's something that people don't know.
I had no idea. You know, I come from a family where I have a retired teacher mom, and the whole, I never paid into Social Security, this is my Social, that's been the argument that I've heard my entire life, but to find out that the teachers are the only ones like that, and that the other four get Social Security on top of these plans.
Let me clarify that, Quade.
Okay.
So the members of the state university retirement system don't get them either. Don't get Social Security either. So the state workers and a lot of workers in the IMRF plan do. Others don't.
Okay.
But I think, you know, what happens in Illinois is there's this blank statement that Illinois government workers don't get Social Security, and that's not true.
So we have Governor-elect Pritzker, who's going to be sworn in January, and this is going to be one of the first things that he tackles. You heard J.B. Pritzker mention he wants to help working families in Illinois. The cynical part of me always said when I heard him say that he's talking about public sector union employees. Are there people, taxpaying voters, who actually think he means them, or did he mean public sector union employees when he said working families in Illinois?
Well, you know, we've always critiqued Madigan also for saying the same thing. When he talks about the middle class and working class, he's always talking about the unions and AFSCME. You know, you can see based on the taxation in Illinois, the lack of power that an ordinary citizen has vis-a-vis the union, you know that Madigan has been talking about the union class. So in this case, you know, we have to see, is Pritzker saying the same thing as Madigan? Are they in sync? Or is Pritzker, and it will be a big surprise for everybody if he stands up for the little guy this time and says, hey, I'm going to defend the ordinary Illinoisan, and I'm not going to grant these massive increases. In fact, I'm going to keep the pay flat, and I'm going to, you know, make sure that they don't keep costing us more and more. That would be a surprise if he does that.
I was going to say, what should we be looking for here politically? I mean, Governor-elect Pritzker can't just be seen as caving, rolling over and showing his belly to AFSCME right out of the gate. That politically, he can't do that. So what should we be looking for here?
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting because they've got to do a face-saving thing. They've got to make it look like Rauner was the bad guy, but we finally got him out of the way. We've got a deal now. Look what happens when you get a normal governor like Pritzker. You'll hear Edgar say the same thing, that you just have to compromise and be bipartisan and negotiate. And they'll try to do that. They'll try to find ways of giving the union something, hopefully without giving them too much. But that's still the wrong thing, Quade. You know, we can't afford these big contracts. And I think what we need to look at is, do we start to look a little bit like the UAW in Detroit, where they keep negotiating better and better benefits, but they're bankrupting, you know, in the case there, it was bankrupting Detroit. Here it's bankrupting the state. They can't keep asking for benefits that are unaffordable. They're going to kill the golden goose.
We technically are the golden goose, and we're very short on time. I was having a conversation with somebody about this yesterday. Is there a way that property owners, taxpaying voters can have representation? Can we organize to have representation in these contract negotiations? Because it almost feels like we're just at the mercy of whatever happens.
Well, you know, so that's a big, big reform that has to happen, and that's, of course, a different discussion and one that we need to prepare ourselves for the next 2 and 4 years. We're a little bit behind now. Pritzker won. There's super majorities in for the Democrats, so expect Aspen to get what they want. But what we need to keep proving is that this is unaffordable. People are going to leave the state, so we're going to see more out-migration. And at some point, either we head towards that, you know, collapse, or there's a big wake-up call by Illinoisans, and we fight back like crazy. And that's a big part of our effort going over the next few years, is to fight back against this, make this clear what's happening, and then to come out with real collective bargaining reforms. We can't continue to let them just do deals without taxpayers at the table.
I have lots more questions, but we're out of time, unfortunately. So we'll have to continue this conversation at a future date. Ted Dabrowski at wirepoints.com, thank you for joining us. We encourage all of our listeners to check out the piece, 6 Facts Pritzker Can't Ignore When Negotiating the AFSCME Contract. Ted Dabrowski, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Clay.
Always a pleasure to have Ted Dabrowski on the show. The conversation continues tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll be here. You should be, too.
The News Roundtable will reconvene tomorrow morning at 10:06 a.m. on AM 930 WTAD. Podcast available online at WTAD.com.